Oh, hey there, listeners and juicers. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that if you have fallen in love with the Draw Your Dice podcast and want to help put some new fruit on the table, but don't feel comfortable making a monthly commitment, well, you can support the show via the Acast supporter feature. No gift too large, nor too small. Just click on the link in the show description and know that I am sending you the strongest hug when you do so.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It exposed the design process as like, oh, it's not like this weird, mysterious process that's like really, it's not like they go into the dungeon and like start brewing in a cauldron or anything. It's just a guy at a Google Doc just throwing words at a page.
My name is Jeremy Gage, and welcome to the Draw Your Dice podcast. This is an educational show involving all things tabletop role-playing industry. Listen alongside me as we hear from creators, entrepreneurs, and supporters about their personal best practices, principles, and philosophies. I encourage anyone from the budding game designer to a seasoned publisher and everyone in between to sit down with us and enjoy today's episode. Everyone, thank you for coming to the Draw Your Dice podcast. My name is Jeremy Gage, and as always, you heard the intro. It is never about me. It is about the person I brought to you today. Long time in the making, kept putting it off because I'll probably edit this out. They're a coward. They are a game designer. They are character keeper master. They are a consistent cast member on the Chromatic Actual Play channel, All Nerds Here over on Twitch. I would like to welcome to the show Kevin Wynn.
So glad to be here. I didn't get a script. I'm out here on my own. Unlike Jeremy, who prepared for this.
Only
Thank
a little
you so
bit.
Much for having me.
Only because I asked. Kevin, just in case, A, I didn't say your last name truly correct, please say it again, but would you give a brief introduction to yourself to the audience, you already know who you are. Would you give an introduction to the people who are listening who may not be aware of who you are? Please make sure to like list any plugs where people can talk to you, find you, hire you for stuff. Let it rip, Beyblades.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Wynn. That's Wynn pronouns. I'm currently using he/him pronouns. You can find my game design work over at wynconditions.com. That's Wynn, like my last name, NGUYEN, conditions.com. And you can see some of that work, including the game we're talking about today, Volley Boys, which is a No Dice, No Masters sort of Haikyuu inspired sports anime, but really the sport is secondary to all the friendship kind of game. And also other games like Bros Agate a Dock, which is a pirate game, which people like a lot. And you can also see some of my work in Unbreakable Volume 1 and Own Voices Asian Anthology of Adventures. The first Volume 1 was a 5e adventure anthology, but the next book coming out soon is Unbreakable Revolutions, which breaks away from the 5e template and includes adventures for Black Hack and that one heist game that everybody loves.
Blades in the Dark,
yes.
new
game from Nevin Holmes, Gunslinger, adventure, yes, for that as well.
Wow. Hello. Somebody is busy behind the scenes, just in the shadows, pumping out all sorts of goodies. Well, I hope that this episode will bring Kevin into a greater light. Additionally, Kevin, as an icebreaker for the listeners. Mm-hmm. Would you please walk us through sort of your journey into tabletop role-playing games, both like what got you into practicing doing role-play, improv, playing games, and then what was sort of like the first thing that got you to start muddling in the game design space?
Yeah, the first blush I had that I can remember I had with tabletop role-playing games was playing D&D. I don't remember what edition it was. It was around the time that Lord of the Rings was coming out. Because I remember every player, including myself, basically made a Lord of the Rings character in that game. And it was god-awful. It was like one of the worst experiences of my life. Because my character, another player, a close friend of mine in high school, ended up just murdering the whole party, doing like some AOE bullshit and killing us all. And we were like, yeah, we're kind of good. We don't need to touch this anymore. We did that and we can move on. And then I didn't touch games again for another couple years at least. And then Critical Role started streaming and I got into that. I started watching that and then I started playing a couple 5e games and then I started running some 5e games on through Play by Post, which is a really fun experience, like doing that more slow burn and more like much more, it felt more story oriented because people had a lot more time to think about their dialogue and stuff. And like I felt, we were using 5e at that time because Critical Role was, and that was the big addition. And I started homebrewing some stuff because I started feeling kind of bumping up against the walls, me, myself, and my players, of what 5e provided, like a lot of folks. So I homebrewed a lot of stuff, homebrewed a setting, homebrewed some classes, homebrewed some character options and things like that, monsters, as most like 5e GMs will do. And then I started seeing more and more like of these indie games, these non-5e games, and I saw like folks, some streamers that were streaming non-5e games, like designing on streams. And that like kind of like it exposed the design process as like, oh, it's not like this weird, mysterious process. That's like really, it's not like they go into the dungeon and like start brewing in a cauldron or anything. It's just a guide to Google Doc, just throwing words at a page. Mm-hmm. And then I was really upset at a job I had at the time working in a call center. And I just made this game, Scald Center, in which you play out being in it's a two-player game. One person is the caller, one person is the call center employee, and there's no way you can win. There's like, it says that in the game because that's just the way call centers go. And from there, I started doing some more hacks, and then I felt like some hacks weren't really representing what I wanted. There was not enough ammo tracking and things like that. There's not enough resource management. In some of those games, and a lot of them were not representative of the narratives and things I was interested with my identity. Like there was not a lot of like representation of like specifically my pair of sister games, Beyond the Boat, Before the Boats, and They Took Our War, are narratives that are focused on the Vietnam War but not on the American perspective. They're focused on the Vietnamese perspective of that conflict, and which is not a perspective that's really represented in English-based media so much, and I wanted to share that. So it's a lot of that, like finding these both mechanical and narrative sort of boundaries that I kept bumping up against. So I'm like, if somebody else isn't going to do it, I guess I will.
Great. Like, are we done? That's a lot.
Nobody made a volleyball game like I liked, the volleyball anime game I liked, so I made one.
I love that. I loved it. I think I've been having a lot of conversations about like what does it mean to create diverse pieces of, what do I want to say? Play isn't necessarily the only word this applies to. It's also stuff mm-hmm. like conceptual theory or kind of academic learning, right? Mm-hmm. In game form.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people in the current, or at least what I'm exposed to, kind of feel, I feel like it's this guarded conversation of like, we are demanding, you know, like getting diverse people hired over at Wizards of the Coast, right? Mm-hmm. That's cool and all. Mm-hmm. But one issue that I don't think a lot of people are thinking about is that no matter how many diverse or inclusive individuals Wizards of the Coast hire, Wizards of the Coast or even Hasbro will never be a black owned, black run. It'll never be an it'll never be a diverse company because that's not what it's been built upon for the last 30 years, right? Or however many years it's been in existence. And so I am more of the mindset of like, I don't want to sit at someone else. Like, I don't want to sit at someone else's table. I don't care for it because that's like asking for permission in a lot of ways, which we have a big rhetoric about of like, we don't need to ask permission to be places, but we are. We are. I think there's some people that are like asking permission to be in an already established place of prestige so that they don't have to put in the work to make their own space. And what I love about where you're coming from with this is that like, I'm not seeing it, I'll do it. Like I'll use my experience to get the space to start being created, right? You're putting in the legwork to show other people or to let people add on to what you're doing as well. And I think that's a very beautiful thing and a mindset I align with as well when I think about what I want to create going forward. So very cool stuff, Kevin. Do you still engage with D&D? This is not like a D&D dunk question. This is just like you had a bad experience with it sort of through the early beginnings of your life. So is that something you still engage with currently today?
I don't currently engage with it. I think 5e as a mechanical thing, it's fine if we acknowledge it as like the combat sim it kind of is and less the narrative sim that people like pretend it's to be. And I would run it if people like really wanted to, but it's no longer going to be my first choice. And I don't like publicly ever want to promote it really because I have a lot of issues with WotC and things like, and what they do in Hasbro. And it's like, there's just better games like to play and promote out there. And like, yeah, it's this big, it's this huge like thing, overwhelming like umbrella. It's an umbrella term for like tabletop in like outside of the industry, and like it gets people in the door, and like it's a it's a useful tool in its own ways. But I don't really engage with it personally too much.
What do you think about that like permission slash making your own place sort of rhetoric as well? Do you have any thoughts in relation to what I said there?
I think it's a mixed bag. I don't want to disparage folks who do jump in, who do like try to work for WotC because like, as like the meme phrase says, we live in a society, like people got to get by. And like, it is a platform that people can use to boost themselves up, which is like, if you can use like the tools against them to like lift up yourself and other marginalized voices, please all more power to you. And I don't want to say like, just cause I don't fuck with 5e doesn't mean like anybody else can't fuck with it. I just think we need to recognize the issues with the company and things like that. And like, be careful with how we like sort of endorse these brands. Like it's not like D&D and WotC is not like, it's not really the community. Like folks say it is, it's a brand, it's a company, it's a product. And like, we can acknowledge the tabletop community and like the community of people that play and make for 5e without like sort of going to bat for this product in this corporation. But also like, it's a scummy corporation that like really in recent days, as we saw with some folks that like sort of came to light with WotC's practices, will hire on diverse folks and just chew them up, use them to their own advantage to like say like, yes, we are diverse. We are hiring people of color. We are hiring queer folks, and then like steal their ideas and then just let them go and let them get burned the fuck out. And so it's like, I think D&D and WotC are a tool that we can use to like kind of uplift ourselves in spite of it, but not because of it.
Yeah. Cool. I'm vibing. I'm here with it. Well, then let's talk about how you've been making space with, starting with a volleyball game that you needed to exist. Let's talk about Volleyboys. So, Kevin, would you just, as the designer, give a brief introduction of like what Volleyboys is, what you're playing, and how you interact with the game as a player?
Right. Yeah. So the shitpost version of this pitch is, have you seen Haikyuu? It's that. So,
but shout out to all my Haikyuu fans out there.
The less shit posty version of this is that it's a no dice, no masters built framework, which is token based and very more character forward than some other games like that we've mentioned on here might be. And it's the Volley Boys is about where you play out as high school students on a volleyball team. And really the volleyball is ancillary to the character dynamics between the characters, because the playbooks of the characters are, you're playing out like the archetypes of characters in a sports anime rather than like the positions of like setter, ace, libero, anything like that, that you would find in volleyball, the actual sport. You're playing out as like the captain, you're playing out as the upstart, the genius, the romantic, the clown. And like a lot of the moves are more like, how do you interact with the other characters on a personal level rather than like, I hit the ball real good, which is like you can do, and which is real cool. It's always cool to like describe how you really get in that spike and you lay into it, the ball, and how the ball like squishes on the frame and like everybody like sort of gasps and the music cuts out. But also it's really cool for the captain to have a move, I think, where you just take another player and you go to the vending machines and you buy him a drink and you say like, what's going on? Like, tell me what are you feeling right now? Or like when you're the romantic and like, you just, you spend a token to ask another player, like, why do you love me? Like, what's, like, I think that's great. That's like the real juice. And like, that's really emblematic of sports anime, in my opinion, because the sports are almost like they're just this catalyst for these character interactions more so than actually like the focus. It's still like a prominent role because it's still cool and sports are cool a lot of times, but it's like really the thing that's the juice for me in these narratives are the character interactions, which is what I wanted to emulate with this game.
And juice, and I love that juice is catching on here. Hashtag Juice Nation. Yeah, I think here's the thing. As cool as the action scenes in Haikyuu are, mm-hmm. right? As cool as like the almost the powers, right? Like, yeah. It's sort of like a little over dramatized in terms of how each character is good at what they do. But the only that show would be useless without the context of watching the journey of all these characters and the relationships they form with one another. Mm-hmm. You know, how all the second years are really tight, how the third years are like, this is their last chance to like live their high school glory days. Mm-hmm. And before like work starts and they get to stop being kids. And then like the journey of someone who is probably going to go on to do this professionally for the rest of their lives, and watching them grow as both a player, but also as like a person, like this coming of age story. And there's so much wrapped up in Haikyuu. Big recommend if no one's like, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched Haikyuu, fucking, if you want some nice, beautiful boy relationships, yes. Let's go. I need it.
Also some strangely very athletically built children, like, yeah. Children with eight packs.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Daichi, dude. I've got high Daichi energy. I'm dad on the court. So let's talk about how first some things of like reactions that I really like about the game. I think the biggest thing that you sort of systemized a little bit, it doesn't like have a hard mechanic to it, but you have a specific paragraph in the book that talks about the audience and how when certain players are not engaged in the scene, they are the audience, right? Yes. And so what's really fascinating about that, and this is only fascinating to me because I come from sort of like a trad adventure background and like D&D, and I do love those sorts of games. Like, I love the trad adventure games, Emberwind, D&D, God Blessed. Like, I liked Dungeon World. I liked Ironsworn, like that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But some of the time you get I can't call this like, this is a personal gripe. This isn't like a gripe at every table. So I should preface that. But you know, you get the, when it's not a character in a scene, they kind of check out. They're like, yeah. Catching up on their phone. They're not really engaged anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the danger of that is that there's like a break in pacing for that specific person. Potentially. Mm-hmm. They may rally really easily. Like, oh, I'm out of my phone and I'm back in the moment, right? Like, I'm that person.
Right.
But you know, I love that you sort of codified the audience and like, hey, when you're not in the scene, we still want you to like sort of be participating in the scene just in this very tertiary way. Was that something that came from like the rip that you wanted to include? Like, is that something also that you're feeling when you, because you come from like sort of a trad adventure background as well. Was the audience on purpose? Did it come at like the later stages of design? Was that the earlier stages of design?
It was an earlier stage of design, and like that, I credit where it's credit's due. It's totally ripped off from Brendan Leon Gambetta's Pasión de las Pasiones, where they have like some audience questions in there. I'm like, you know what? That feels emblematic, because that also being a game that emulates telenovelas, and like I'm like this, you're playing at a TV show in Volley Boys, and like so like when you're not in the scene, you're watching, and like in the show Haikyuu, in the main touchstone of the game. Like when somebody's not on the court, they're on the sidelines and they're cheering on, or they're like really mollified by like what's happening, or like just like gripping their face like in like anxiety and things like that. And like they're watching and engaging. And I wanted to involve that. And also a lot of what you said, because I've had games where people are just hanging out on the side. I was in one 5e game where some dude, like as soon as his character wasn't in a scene, he would just like start watching Twitch streams on his phone, but like with the mic on, and like it was the worst thing. And then he would come back and be like, okay, catch me up on the scene that just happened. I'm like, so it's like, it's not even like you where it's like you can just roll back in. He would break the pacing even more for the people that were involved in that scene, and I'm just like, I kind of hate that. So this is like a bit of a carrot and stick of like, no, there's a reason for you to pay attention. There's like a mechanic to engage with here. So like, if you're not paying attention, then you can't engage with this mechanic as well. But also like, because it fits with the whole like sort of diegetic of playing out a show and like being on, maybe being in the background of a scene, your character's in the background of the scene, but not necessarily the spotlight of it. And I just like getting players that aren't in that spotlight involved is something that I think is, there's a lot more space that we can explore too, because not everybody needs to be spotlighted in every scene. Like sometimes you do want to focus on these two characters that have in this moment, but then you also don't want to have players just kind of checking out, because people have carved out time of their day. Like they've carved out these 3-4 hours of their day to play this game. And like, if they are just kind of sitting there for who knows, maybe up to half the time, not involved in actual play, that kind of sucks, because you've scheduled out this time in your day. And like, you can, it, like some folks of that group may feel like it was time wasted.
Yeah. And that, you know, I think a perfect example of that on a mainstream level is Critical Role. Like some of those like 2-person, 3-person scenes go on for like 45 minutes, sometimes a little longer. And like, that's a lot of time to just be hanging out there, you know? Yep. And they love it. Like they're all friends, but in a practical at home game, maybe there's like a 50-50 chance that's happening.
And even among friends, like there's those days like when you're just not in the mood to just be sitting around. Like it's a day to day thing and like moment to moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the audience thing is so fascinating, and it really like sparks me as a designer in that how can I codify things that allow people to keep the engagement going? Maybe not at like a heightened level, like being in the scene or having their own climax, but how can they assist with the climax so that it, and I think we've seen variations of this in that when, you know, like Devil's Bargains in Blades in the Dark is an example of this, right? That's still like an audience participation thing, but it's super optional. So I'm thinking about things that are much more like concrete to the benefit of all the players, right? Rather than just like when you can think of a good idea, like having those sort of handholdings or scaffoldings to let people engage with that. I think the audience stuff is a triumph, and it's really smart. And also credit where credit's due, Brendan Leon Gambetta, come on the goddamn show. Okay. You hear me? let's book this thing.
Let me just add Brendan right now.
Yeah, this real fast live. Wait, do we do it? Hold on. I might actually do it.
And like, I don't know if you want to keep this in, but Brandon does run a really good masks game, and like sometimes we'll put out open invites for Protean City. I was on it with Alex and Simon. Great time.
Aw. I do want to be on that. Where is Brandon? Brandon Leon Gambetta tweeting. No one will hear this episode for like weeks.
Just zero context. This is
yeah.
Get my Twitter up. Be the first person to like.
Tweet this man. Whoops, I need to also at you.
And like Passion's big release is coming up, I'm pretty sure. So good time.
Boom. Sent. Live send. I know he listens to the show, so there's a good chance.
Fan, Brandon Leon Gambetta.
Yeah, the BLM. But yeah, I think the audience stuff is wicked cool. And even in like a trad adventure thing, I see it like the other players could be the dungeon. The other players could be like reframing the terrible inspiration mechanic to actually be like almost a devil's bargain thing, but in the positive way. For the other players who might like split the party for like a good reason, right? Like think about like use a bond from someone that is like miles across from you or in another city. And like, oh, there's just some cool unexplored tech there. I think not explored, but morphed, made. There's a word. There's someone. Comment, review, just tell me. You'll figure it out.
There's a call to action.
Yeah. Fucking CTA comment. Don't join my Patreon, just comment.
Always split the party. That's I hate always that GM advice. I hate always like, split the party. Never split the party. No, or like that player advice, I guess. Always just split the party. If they wanted to be joined at the hip, they should have been joined at the hip.
Like, yep.
They're individual characters. They can go do their own things.
Autonomy, dude.
Yes.
Fucking, it reminds me of a meme of like it's the fucking template meme of like the crow and the pigeon. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it's like the pigeon is this little like sweet innocent thing and the crow is like this overbearing character in the comic, and it's like, all right, the pigeon's the warlock and the crow is the rogue, and so the DM's like, everyone goes to sleep, the pigeon wakes up and goes, all right, I want to get up and like go off to the edge of the forest and talk to my patron. Crow immediately screams, I wasn't sleeping the entire time. I wake up. I drag the warlock back to bed. And the pigeon's just like,
ugh, that's the worst.
I hope everyone can like handle that yelling. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. But I wanted to make the crow a real character.
Yes.
Anyways, back to Volley Boys.
Yes.
So you've been working on two volleyball games, essentially. Yes. A competitive version, and you know, we don't have to get into the other one, but what I want to ask is, was there a point these two games were one, and when did you, was there like a decoupling that happened, or did you always have like the idea of one will be very narrative focused, the other will be very like high octane competitive energy?
Right. And for folks at home who do not know, who are not of like six people in the planet, I started with another game that's currently still a work in progress, Nice Kill, which is like it's playing out more of the volleyball action. If you want less of the character drama, if you want less of that, like the character juice, and you want more of just like hitting balls and like really blocking and like yelling, just screaming at each other, like I fucking got you and shit like that. if you want more of that, this game will hopefully come out soon, and it's more like playing about you actually are playing for the points on the court, you're playing for momentum, and that's where I started. And I found Volley Boys sort of came out after, because I finally read a No Dice No Masters game. I read Orbital, which is sort of a riff on No Dice No Masters, and I got really inspired because I felt like it was really, a lot of the tools felt, they just like really clicked with my brain. I'm like, I had some of these like character stuff in Nice Kill, but they weren't super fleshed out. They're they definitely support the mechanics of that more sport play, but they weren't the focus or anything. And I was doing a rewatch of Haikyuu and I was like, okay, I've kind of seen all these like actual court moments, and there's like a couple highlights that like will always hit really hard. But for the most part, I'm on rewatches. I'm mostly here for the character interactions. I'm mostly here to watch this boy break a broom because he's so mad. His friend is upset at him.
I'm mad that you're mad.
Yeah. And neither of us are going to stop being mad till the other one stops being mad.
What a beautiful relationship, truly.
Oh, God. And there definitely is a lot of that. There's some of that character juice because there's like these character interactions that happen on the court in the scope of play. But I did feel like I kind of just ripped a bunch of that out, or not even ripped out, but I just ripped off and made Volley Boys with that. But that I still hope to incorporate that, because as much as Volley Boys is character focused, there is still the sport component, and you need that catalyst to cue up those character scenes. That's why there's like the next time on mechanics where like, no, you lose a game, you win a game, and like you just check off those boxes, because those set up those scenes for that character drama. And the way in reverse in Nice Kill, the character relationships set up these plays, and like, so when you have two characters that are like, when you have a character, let me pull up the Nice Kill work in progress real quick. Yeah, when you have a character that is spiteful playing, they're playing in a way that like where because they're playing every point that the other team is ahead of you, they are more motivated out of spite to do better. But then they also are not playing as well with their other teammates because they're just focused on the other team. They're just focused on the score. They're not really focused on cooperating. They're very much like that bulldog character in Haikyuu. They're just like, they're lone wolf. They're not being a team player while they are like crushing it in this very narrow scope. They're not being a great team player. So in the long run, it's not great. And that character dynamic feeds into the play, like making moves to like spike the ball or block and things like that. So there is a back and forth. And like, in Volley Boys, it's a lot more character centric, and in Nice Kill, it's a lot more sport centric. Neither can do without the other. I think it's just where the balance lies between.
Do you envision a version of, because what's sounding interesting to me, and you know, feel free to have this idea for free, but it sounds like there's a potential for like how Blades in the Dark has a mission phase and a downtime phase. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have subtly have both workings of character narrative and like a court narrative it built into both games, just at different intensities. There seems to be also like a couple, like though they're decoupled, you could also maybe potentially recouple them and play out. Like, I think it'd be so fascinating to watch like an actual play where it's like two or three episodes of Volley Boys, where you're sort of like doing character buildup. Maybe you opt out of doing any like game related prompts, and then like you go to game day and you play like sessions of Nice Kill, and you could also do like different teams. The only reason I'm thinking about this is because I talked with Chloe Fulminata, who wrote Our Minerva. In Our Minerva, you basically build a team of three demigods. And they do some sort of like sport activity while slowly reminiscing about the childhood they never had. And what's fascinating about the character creation, how the character keeper is built in that game, is that every single player has three demigods that they're responsible for. And so two players will be operating a troop of characters together in like a competition. And the game is structured in such a way that like you could do character creation for yourself, build a team of three, and then go to someone's house and play Our Minerva and have never had these two teams interact before that session. So I totally imagined a version where like you could do a buildup of these sport characters, bring your own team to, or bring your own like It'd be totally cool to see like a 3v3 of, you know, you have individual. It's like watching fucking Nekoma and Kurasano, yeah. Like watching individual streams happen on the Volley Boys level,
yeah,
and then have the streams come together on the Nice Kill level and play each other. That'd be fucking. I'm hyped, no, and it doesn't exist, but I would love for it to happen.
That's absolutely like the intention, like pie in the sky. Like,
yes,
indie punk bastard Vidya Valetti. Is he indie or punk anymore? I don't know. Debatable. Always bastard. But he initially, like when I pitched him Volley Boys, he's like, is this your Firebrands? Like, there's two Firebrands. There's their narrative, like pick questions one, and then there's like the grid based mech combat one. Mm-hmm. Is it like that relationship? I'm like, yes, it is. thank you for that. And yeah, and like Nekoma, like what's it? Every season after season one, there's like two or three episodes just of mm-hmm. Nekoma, and you never see the Karasuno boys. And I love that. So like you different players coming together, like with their teams and like sort of interacting on that level. I do love that. And I have a couple of ideas for that kind of stuff. I have a different game. Or a different pair of games that are like related in that same way where mm-hmm. I would love to bring it to print. And I would love for like it, the first half of the book to be one game. And then you literally like flip the book 180 vertically. And then you have this other related game. So it's just the two games and the one booklet and they're related, but you're flipping back and forth as you're playing these two different games.
That'd be so, was that like a modal game? Is that like what you would call that?
I do not know. I know there's like novels that have tried to do that, and I've never read any of them, but it's always seemed like a cool idea.
I'm using like a Magic the Gathering card game term. It's like modal cards are the ones that are double faced, so you flip them over and they're a different card. Oh. So I think, oh, that's so fascinating to have a game like that. Like what would D&D be like if there was the combat simulator on mm-hmm. one side, and then there is like a good narrative game that still like fits within the same theme setting mm-hmm. elements. And then you just kind of like, when you feel the time is right, swapping mm-hmm. between those two things. Cause that's what regular D&D is right now. It's like there's combat and then there's not combat. That's exactly. The game. That's like the loop, right?
Because yeah. as people say that combat is RP, nobody's really having these long drawn out discussions during RP as much as they claim to be and like to. Like it's just I roll my dice and I hit and like I go and like maybe they'll yell out like some good one liners, but really that's not the character juice. So they're in D&D, there is this break of combat and character role play. And like, yeah, just mechanically break those out.
Yeah, it would be so fascinating, honestly. I mean, Dimension 20 sort of does this with their regular season of shows in that one episode is roleplay and one episode is combat. They break them up into episodes for people to digest in those manners. And I think that I already thought that was really smart. But now with you, like you've presented this idea to me for what might be the first, like I've been exposed obviously to like phased games. Mm-hmm. But to engage in like two different games mm-hmm. that are designed to interact with each other when you see fit, like when game day comes, we're doing Nice Kill. Everyone be ready. Yeah. You know, like, ah.
Because everyone clapping as much as Firebrands. What's it? Firebrands Mobile Zero and then Firebrands.
Yeah, Mobile Frame Zero.
And then I can't remember the other Firebrands games. As much as they are related and you could like interact with them that way, I don't think I've ever heard of anybody actually sort of jumping in instead of doing the combat of the story focused game, jumping over to like Lego mech grids for the combat stuff, which would be cool. And I never hear people do.
For Volley Boys, just to get sort of back into that lane of thinking. So this sort of came outside of after the effect of Nice Kill, and it's sort of like a decoupling of really strengthening the thematics of those games. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is more of a question for you as a designer. You've made quite a few products so far, or mm-hmm. also that you're working on quite a few products.
Oh, yeah.
What is sort of like not only to make your own space in terms of your identity, but like, what is, what do you aim to create every time you set out to, like, what do you look for to capture? Cause you talk about character juice. You talk about how, like, you said it a couple times and it seems like it's something you love about characters. And I know that you had a lot of fun playing Pasión de las Pasiones with the other All Nerds crew. What makes you design the designs you're doing? Like, what are your design principles, I guess, is like at current? What are your like top three design principles when you're designing these games?
I mean, the things I really aim for are like really trying to inject the most drama into any situation through the game, either be that through like presenting these narrative prompts or through mechanics. And like, what I think is dramatic may not everybody think is dramatic. I think resource tracking is dramatic. That's become like a meme of mine, like for folks who know me, but I do like, there's like this tension of like that scene in Aliens, like when they're watching the ammo counters go down, they're literally just looking at a screen, watching numbers go down. But you know, like this like those numbers are like the difference between them living and them dying. Mm-hmm. And like, People say like they hate like tracking water and like food and stuff, but like in a survival game, that's what you need. That's like the tension there, and tension is drama in a lot of cases. But like, there's also, I also want to match that drama with the fiction and with the packaging. I have not played Ryutama myself, but I know some folks who have gripes that like it's presented as this light and fanciful like sort of traveling drama that's, and then they get bogged down by tracking water and things like that, where it's like, that's not really the fantasy or the fiction that they want to engage with. So like, there's this balance of like, of balancing like dramatic sort or matching the drama to the packaging and like sort of making sure that like, they're all presented really clearly. I don't want to throw volley boys at somebody and say like, this is going to be hardcore. This is going to be like super intense mechanics. You're going to have to do like stoichiometry to figure out your success rates. And I don't know why. chemistry was awful for me in high school. So
deep Kevin brain just then.
And like, there's, yeah, like I want games to be like a lot more, I guess I want them to be focused in both the drama and the fiction they present and the mechanics, and like making sure that both of those sort of meet the expectation of the people buying into the game or like coming into the game to play. Because I want things to be like sort of idiosyncratic to my tastes, I don't want anybody to be like at least super thrown off by like what's there. I don't want it to feel like random. Like, just, I don't want things to feel like they're thrown in just to be thrown in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds like there's a lot of, do you think that as you're building games like Volley Boys out, as opposed to Nice Kill, which is probably a little bit more, a little crunchier. Yeah. I'm making assumptions. I've not seen the game, but
did you play test?
Yes, I will. I'll spike some kids. Hello, Vid. I'm calling you out, Rue. Where are you at? I will dunk, Nevin. Hello.
The first play test that I have like coming up, I will get you in there.
Put me in, coach. I just need a juice box. I'm like 12 years old, ripped abs. Seems like there is a search for tension and really grabbing the high highs and the low lows of a narrative, yes. Right? Instead of like the, I don't want to say middling. Middling is not the right word. More like this. I think a lot of people try to capture like the meandering ebb and flow of high and low tension, in the sense of like, if we're talking a scale 1 to 10, everyone tries to stay within a 3, -3 range. And like, then they one time will hit like an 8, and then another time they'll hit a -6. Right. Whereas it sounds like for you, you're trying to capture the, you're trying to widen the waveform, like stretch it out. And then it sounds like you're trying to bounce back from like 8 to negative 7 to 5 to like negative 10 to 10 to like, and you're like trying to find those or extrapolate or distill those moments in drama to make that the focus, right? To make the drama the focus and the character growth rather than anything else that could be sort of like secondary or tertiary around that. And, you know, as you memed, but also it's true, like running low on spell slots, low health, you're running out of arrows, you're still like 7 levels deep inside of the Dungeon of the Mad Mage, like... Mm-hmm. Where are you getting more arrows, bro? All of your bow skills are dunzos. Like, how are you casting more spells for the day? Are you going to take a long rest when you didn't clear out the last passage? Like, those.
Do you have the rations for that long rest?
Are you eating? So many times. You've immediately made me recontextualize, like, what it means to do food in D&D. And I don't think D&D cares about food, to be honest, but like.
It doesn't.
Yeah. If you're dungeon crawling, are you able to like be out there for a week until you get create food and water? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you want to be gritty.
Have you engaged with the really old adventure game, a NetHack?
No.
It's
Dan Phipps's favorite.
Yeah. It's like food is like the most important resource in that. Like the most common like way players die is starving because like they are so many levels deep, they're using their energy to like fight and cast spells and things, and like you might be lucky enough to find some cat food, or you just gotta go and eat a gnome. You just gotta like, you gotta do what you gotta do, and like that's the crux of that like that pair game that I want to have, the modal game that you had dubbed it, sort of like as food being really important. And that's like a really popular manga right now, Dungeon Meshi, or like I can't remember the English name, but Dungeon Meshi. It's like, no, like food is important. Like food is part of your like life in normal, in any non-adventuring circumstance. Why is it excluded otherwise? And like, just like considering those kinds of things, like, especially because I love food in general. So incorporating that stuff into the adventuring day, but in a way that's not necessarily like, just because you have food in a game doesn't mean it has to be like Ghibli-esque and lighthearted and things like that. Like the way some products, specifically like 5e products, will like have you believe you can have like food be a resource and not be baking bread and
literally eating grass, dude. What is that anime / manga, Made in Abyss, right? She eats some. Have you ever watched or read it?
I have not.
Dude, low key, maybe missing out. High resource management game. show. But she eats some crazy shit just to live, man. Like, she is not afraid to like dive into some. I was like, I've never seen this before. I wonder what it tastes like, because I don't have a choice.
Wonder if it's poisonous or not. Let's just go in. Because exactly. I'm going to die anyway. So
she literally says it. Like, sometimes she's like, you know what? I have some really good, like, what are it? Like the abyss, the dungeon, or the big hole that they go in. Like, sometimes she's like, you know what? I know some methods about getting rid of poison, but honestly, it's a crapshoot at the end of the day, the deeper we go down here. So yeah, it's crazy. But those moments are still good because she's an awesome cook. She figures out how to cook these goddamn 6-armed slug things. And like, you know, it's still a part of the story. I think what I'm picking up from you, and I think what I'm also trying to say is that there are some I think there's some romanticism about the adventure lifestyle that people get from D&D. This isn't just about D&D. I think when we think about like crunch things, like you have to track rations. Oh, this is like a survival horror game. Like, or it could still be your epic adventure game. You just don't have the resources to be eaten all the time. So you got to bring the rations. And if you run out, you gotta go home. You can't be out all day. Or and like that
Breath of the Wild, like this pretty lighthearted aesthetically and everything. But like at the end of the day, to get those hearts back, you gotta eat. You gotta go hunt something down, get some food, or like find some peppers, go cook them over fire and eat. Like it doesn't need to be like the super gritty thing, and like depending on the way you package and pitch the game, it doesn't need to be super involved.
Yeah.
But I think there's room for a lot of this stuff that's not really, that's like sort of passed over in traditional games, especially like the big two, like D&D and Pathfinder for fantasy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's tension and resource for sure. And you're like with the token system for No Dice, No Masters, like that seems like a thing. Was this also influenced in any part by, I don't know if you've read it, but Galactic 2E, because I saw that you have the fundamental moves that do shared tokens, which is what in my interview with Riley mentioned, I've not read the original No Dice, No Masters stuff, but I have played Sleepaway with Max V, who's been on the show. And one of the things that I didn't necessarily like about Sleepaway were the neutral moves. Like, they didn't give you anything, they didn't take anything away from you. And that's fine, but it's like that doesn't engage the game.
Yeah,
I guess
that's more informative of your character rather than engaging.
Right, but. Right. And so in Galactic 2E, Riley has given the playbooks these abilities that share tokens between characters instead of just being strong and weak moves that take and give. You can also pass along tokens to other players. So, like, have you read that? Or is this just, like, another, like, you know, it's that thing of, like, someone else, there's a million people.
I'm an idiot.
There is more than 7 billion people in the world. Someone's bound to think of the thing that you're thinking of.
Yeah, so like no original ideas, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I happened to come upon it myself, and then I pitched it to Nevin and Viditya, and they're like, oh yeah, Galactic 2E does this. So it's like, and then I looked at that, and I was like, okay, so there is legs to this idea, whereas before that, it was just like, what if you could just like give and take tokens, like as a like sort of fundamental move, or like trade tokens in that way. And so it was, I didn't read Galactic 2E before coming up with the idea, but it was nice seeing that validation that like somebody, like clearly there's somebody else came up with the idea, and then like they thought it was good enough to include in their games. Like, this is something I can pursue. Not all of my fundamental moves are like that. It's just one move per playbook, because I honestly just couldn't think of more. I already made all those other moves before getting to that idea. I'm like, these are actually pretty good though, so I'm not going to throw them out. So I'll put a cherry on top of including this like new mechanical kind of move. So yeah, we both like arrived at the same point. It's like, it's cool. It's cool to know that we both arrived to that point through separate paths.
And that you saw a similar pain point too in No Dice, No Masters of like, you know, these don't really like do anything. These don't really do anything. They help, like, maybe guide some improv choices, but that's not engaging right? You're not, like, turning on the car, I guess, would be my best analogy. What's the thing you're proudest about when it comes to Volley Boys? Like, it could be a piece of design or something like that, or, you know, how do you feel about it?
I think
take your time.
Yeah, just scrolling through my own game real quick.
Releases it, wipes it from memory.
I need room for all the other ideas. Yeah.
I'm only using 10%, dude.
I think I'm really proud that I distilled a lot of these like greater archetypes of like sports anime into these playbooks, because I think I did them really well in like that they are evocative. They're both evocative, but they're not like, they aren't so tight that like there's no room for people to make it their own character, because then there's that risk of like being too narrowly focused in playbooks that like it feels like everybody is playing the same character. Like every fucking, what the hell are they called?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's that? What's the every swashbuckling rogue in 5e feels like every other swashbuckling rogue in 5e?
Yes,
pretty much. Yep. Whereas I think I made them like I think I made these playbooks sort of evocative enough that you know exactly what kind of a character you're playing. But like I think there's not much chance that unless you are specifically trying to emulate the character from Haikyuu that it's mostly based on that. Two players with the same playbook would make the same character. I think I'm really proud of that. Then, sort of like that balance of like sort of emulation versus sort of freedom, like giving boundaries so that you're not feeling kind of lost, but also like having them be good guides.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's fun. The little asterisk at the bottom of the genius is funny. Hey, if you read it, if you buy the game, you'll know what we're talking about, right? So go give them the $10. But yeah, I think that definitely it like in D&D again. I try to aim to not make this channel a D&D dunk channel, so yeah. That you know, not my but intent.
It is like the biggest. Thing in the room.
It's if anyone were coming to listen to this, there's a good chance of using these to like compare to if someone else is looking for a game out there. But it's like you say, a swashbuckler rogue is the same as another swashbuckler rogue. You're gonna focus on dexterity or whatever have you. You're gonna build out your constitution because you're gonna be melee. Like and, you know, people who I think there's also an interesting conversation of like. Yeah, well, I built my swashbuckler rogue to be a strength swashbuckler. I just use a finesse weapon. I was like, you're still kind of doing the same thing. You're just trying to say that you put it in a different stat. Or like, I didn't make dex my highest because I want a clumsy swashbuckler rogue. Cool, then you're choosing to play the game suboptimally, which I guess is fine for your table, but that's not like playing the game, right? Like, yeah. The game's not structured or built for you to do that, and you're just doing it out of defiance. So maybe there's something else you want to play. And really the thing that changes it is the layer on top of your original character concept, right? The thing that's different is my tiefling swashbuckler rogue versus my halfling swashbuckler rogue, right? Like those are the differentiating parts, but that's on the player's leverage. Yeah. And so I think what's great about what you've done here is that, you know, in, again, this is going to be a Haikyuu reference, so this is hard because for someone, this is a non, like, inclusive example, right. But like, oh shit, what is his name? Alba? No, that's the school's name.
Yeah. You're thinking
what's like, Kawa? Is that Kageyama's, like, look up mentor rival person from Alba? Cool. Yeah, so they're both the geniuses. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just different. They're truly different geniuses, though, in different ways. Mm-hmm. They're both great setters. One has like a disgusting spike, but the other has like a really reliable teammate. So like the way that they engage being a genius mm-hmm. is wildly different, because it has so much different dynamic when it's in reference to the environment and the story on the court. So I think you've done a really good job in allowing for that to happen. There's no like better way to put it. I was like, is there a more refined term to say this? No. I think it's really interesting that you've provided those that so many different ways to like build out. It's not also just in like building the character. It's also about in like what prompts you mm-hmm. choose to engage with all the time. Yeah. Right. Like,
because different players will have different like sort of ones they'll lean harder on.
Exactly. And on. Exactly.
Because not every genius may lean on like asking a rival, like, what can you teach me?
Yeah.
Like some geniuses like will just be like, no, I can do this on my fucking
own. I can fucking teach myself. What do you mean? What can I teach myself?
What else is there left to learn?
Yeah, I think it's about being dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of I'm like having a brain blast right now. A lot of D&D is static after creation, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're locked into being a rogue. And then the next dynamic choice, the final dynamic choice you get to make is your subclass. Now, someone might argue is like, well, what about feats or ability score increases? Those don't really like change the identity of the mechanisms that you're engaging with when it comes to the game. And whereas like those, in this, like
the very popular ones that most people will pick because they're the most mechanically optimized.
Correct. Whereas in this, like it's more of a narrative base that says like you can change and drive your character based on the choices you make. Like we just said, the prompt of like, hey, what can you teach me? Like, I'm not that type of genius. Does what the fuck is his name again? Wiyaka? Yeah. Oikawa, Jesus Christ, it is an O. I was like, where did W come from? He doesn't ask to learn from anybody. He doesn't give a shit. He's like, I'm just going to get good, dude.
Right.
Whereas Kageyama's like, you know what? I'm going to swallow my pride and ask everyone, like, how can I improve, right? The Mia twins and fucking mm-hmm. Oikawa in of himself, right? Mm-hmm. And even in some cases, Suga also teaches mm-hmm. him some stuff, whereas like that's just not Oikawa's way. In fact, he brings out the good in other people, and that's his genius way, right? Whereas Kageyama mm-hmm. is trying to self-improve.
Yep.
So they're just so different, and you've executed that beautifully. I love this concept now that I'm thinking about, like, what is dynamic character growth? Like, what does that look like in a trad adventure space, right? Because that's my focus of mm-hmm. design. So great. Wow, powerful. And that's why I make the show. It's selfish for me to learn. There's no like no online course guru of like how to design a tabletop game. Maybe that'll be me one day, but maybe not. So I'm glad to have gurus like you on the show, Kevin.
Oh.
Yeah, you see how I slipped that in? You see that little compliment there? You like that?
And I'm fighting my hardest not to be self-deprecating response. Yeah.
No, the classic Kevin. Yeah. No, I want all the love. Great. I think, one last thing I guess I want to talk about Volley mm-hmm. Boys, just as a design thing. The magazine articles at the end that you did for other people's games. I would love to like, why did you do that?
I actually did not do these. I approached some folks. I approached, well, first myself.
Look out for nice kill. Yeah.
I approached Charu Patel and Vaditya Valetti and Nevin Holmes. I asked them amongst a couple of folks. I asked you, Jeremy, but you weren't able to participate.
I have no game.
Yeah.
I didn't want to participate. I don't like Kevin.
I asked some folks to make, if they were interested in making ads for their either current or upcoming projects. And I came to that because I was reading, like, in the first time in a long time, I was reading a book, and it was just like a traditional fantasy novel. And at the end, it was just like the publishers advertising a bunch of other like books from their catalog, and like a little preview of a different game or a different book at the end. I was like, that's really neat. Why don't like tabletop games do that? Especially in the indie space, especially like in PDFs, where it doesn't cost mm-hmm. us more to put more pages in a PDF. I just kind of threw that out there because I want to like put, I want to put my friends' voices out there and like put their work out there, and I want to support them. And like, this is a really easy way, just like throwing people, like, if you like this, maybe you'll like my friend's other stuff in this way. And also like sort of that very 90s PlayStation Game Informer kind of way. I was very tempted to like put the ads right throughout the middle of the book, like between playbooks and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I thought like that might be too disruptive for like play. Mm-hmm. For play. And so I just put them at the end in that initial like sort of novel model. And I think we should like be promoting other people's work beyond just like shout out on Twitter, which is great, which is like, I mean, of course it's always really helpful because Twitter is a huge marketplace and where a lot of folks' audiences are, but like Twitter is not the end all be all of our audiences, especially mm-hmm. in the game design space. Like, and I don't know how to promote other people's games on itch.
Great. Yeah. I think truly groundbreaking. Like, I know it exists in other industries and other mediums, but I truly think this is like some groundbreaking stuff here. Just like, I don't know. I'm not privy to a lot of stuff, and I think this is such a beautiful and great idea, because one, you can let people do a little bit extra creative oomph and design their own magazine ad, right? Mm-hmm. And the ones that are in the back of the book here are very cool.
I love Ruse. Everyone is Prem. Like,
yeah,
she kind of like let me in on me and a couple other folks in on her process as she was designing it, like showing the initial reference of the Bollywood movie poster that she was basing it on, and like sort of the like a couple different iterations with different texts and things like that. I love this ad so much. It looks amazing to me.
It's I think what a beautiful, and this, you know, we could apply this in a bunch of different business models, right? Like if we talk about something as large as Exalted Funeral or Evil Hat Productions or whatever, right? Like they could definitely, like, what if Blades in the Dark in like the back of the PDF or the front mm-hmm. of the PDF? I think this would be, just thinking of like an entrepreneurial marketing mindset, these should be like in the front of the book, because every time they open the PDF, they'll scroll through these. Whereas like if it's at the end, they'll probably never see these again, maybe. Yeah. And that's not for you. That's for like anyone else who thinks about doing this. You do it your own goddamn way. If you want to put it in the middle of the book, also cool. But you know, what if like Blades in the Dark had a little ad? Like, I can't tell you, I've only looked at like other Forge in the Dark products link on the site maybe three times over the course of me knowing it exists. Whereas like, what if I opened the book every time and was reminded that like Scum and Villainy exists or Band of Blades exists, right? Like if I'm looking for something different, these games are out there. Mm-hmm. And not just in like the print version, but the PDF version. And like the PDF version could be updated every once in a while with new ad space. And, you know, capitalism here, like my poisoned mind, but also like you could change up your ads every once in a while on a PDF. People mm-hmm. like, I see a lot of like coming soons on here, but like when those games come out, those coming soons could change into actual like, hey, this game is out and found here, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. The PDF form could just be a clickable hyperlink straight to the itch page.
Yeah. Yes, Kevin. Yes. And so just as like a finishing nugget of this, I think it's such a – and it's so nostalgic too. Like what you're talking about, the PlayStation magazines, like that's the first thing I thought of when I saw this, is like all these clips for like different Square Enix games that are coming out. You know, the newest Final Fantasy VIII is being released, and like the new Metal Gear Solid and fucking Ratchet and Clank. Like all of those games I have – like solid memories of walking through a Walmart, picking up the magazine, the PlayStation magazine, just riffing through the and stealing the free CD that was inside.
You monster.
I was 8, dude. I don't give a fuck. I don't have any morals when you're 8 years old. You just do what you want. You're a scientist. But I think it's amazing. It's so cool, and can also have like very cool resonant, like if you were to form your own like the what is it? What are they called? Moon rat, moon mouse, the moon mouse conspiracy, the moon rat conspiracy.
I'm not familiar with this.
they're like a game design troupe that like doesn't really heavily publicize themselves, but you'll know they're in a game because they say whenever you credit us in a game, put a little mouse icon next to us. Oh. And so like if it shows up, you know that one of them had a part to do in the game. And so wouldn't it be cool if like those were all linked together and like some, like, why doesn't our indie tabletop zine culture not adopt this already? Like they are magazines, right? And I know like some people are like, that's not what the culture is about. It's not about the capitalism. It's about going underneath the capitalism, but it's like, I don't know. This is a beautiful way to do it. This is a beautiful way to do it, to be like, I really like these people. I think they have really cool games. Mm-hmm. I want you to know about them. And you may not be on Twitter. You may not be on Itch, but you may really like volleyball. Got my game. Now you know these other four games exist.
It's not like, and I didn't like sort of speeds that capitalism thing. I didn't come up to these people say like, hey, I've got ad space. You want to buy ad space? I'm right. Like, no, you are cool people. I know you. I know y'all really well. And I like your games and your games have influenced me. And I want to help like sort of return the favor by having you do more work and give it to me.
Go ahead.
No, you could go ahead.
I was going to say, like, this is also like maybe an even better way to do like the inspirations section of, mm-hmm. I mean, it increases your page count. So maybe only PDFs, but like, this would be such a cool way to do like, you know, this game was inspired by these other games. Here they are in like the back of the book as far as like their covers or something. Right. I don't know what intellectual property permissions you need for something like that. Right. But yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's a really cool visual medium and really engaging to get people to explore other titles.
Mm-hmm. More good so job, than Kevin. Like the touchstone, like as I always include my touchstones and things like that and like sort of inspirations and people I accredit, but like it's a little bit more engaging than just having like that like third page in your zine or your book of mm-hmm. just like a wall of text that like kind of like even for me having done them, it kind of reads as like the legal text at the beginning of any paperback. I kind of just like, oh, that's that page that I always see. I kind of just like, let me get to this.
And also like, what if you did a cool like collage thing for your touchstones of like just grabbing little again, intellectual property stuff.
Right.
You know, if your game has a bunch of like novel references and movie references, like what if you just had a collage page that had those movie posters or book covers? Like, you know, I'm not the person who's going to like read or watch every touchstone this game is based on. Mm-hmm. And I guess I could look them up myself, but like, how cool would it be for someone who's new to the game to look through, see that page, be like, oh, I'm now getting a really good idea of like the atmosphere of mm-hmm. what this game wants me to do. Right. Like when I engage with it. So I think some visual stuff to do in books in that way could be really cool. And as far as I'm concerned, you're the pioneer of it. Never seen anyone else who's done it on an indie level. So
I will accept that title because I have not seen it done anywhere else either.
Hell yeah.
Even like, well, within publishers, like you were saying, like Evil Hat could easily like broadcast their own like other Fortunes of the Dark games. Like, so like you avoid intellectual property at all. Like I did, I advertised my coming related Nice Kill game. It's like, it's simple, easy, straightforward.
Yeah. Do it. Yeah. How much does it cost you? Probably nothing. It's probably the same cover you're going to use for the game and it's already done.
Exactly.
So. Trends, tips. I think we talked about a couple of trend things just like personally, but so in this section, I ask that you sort of like think about or analyze your social circles, your Discord communities, your Twitter shit posts, your, you know, intimate friend texts about the tabletop space. You know, are there any trends that you love that you just want to like propagate and tell more people about, like get them out into the space? Are there trends that you're seeing that are maybe being detracted from the scene that you want to caution people against? Or are there trends within you that you would like to let someone run away with who's listening to this episode?
I think more folks should find other people to play Mahjong with to pitch games. And as I, Jeremy, Viditya Valetti, and Ru Patel do, and often a lot of good ideas come out of those talks, like really finding these social circles and like beyond just like passive Discord talks, like find an activity to do together that's like not super brain engaging that you can kind of chat over. Mm-hmm. Like that could be playing video games. I could be playing like Destiny or whatever, as I also do with some folks, playing Mahjong, playing, I don't know, 3D chess if you're that smart. But like finding these things that like kind of
task switching.
Yeah. And finding these things that kind of engage your brain on a low level so that you can still engage on a social level and like that, like kind of queue up ideas. I find a lot of really good ideas come out of when I'm just chatting with folks while doing another thing together, whether that be watching a movie or anything like that. And then shorter game jams on Itch, I think would be cool. I think I participate in a couple of game jams. Some of my best games have come out of there so far. And I appreciate the long lead times because it gives you time to work on a thing. And like it's accommodating for all kinds of people's schedules. But I think there's also space in our space, especially the Itch space, where a lot of these game jams I know of are being held, for a lot tighter game jams, because the tighter game jam is going to let some messier work come out, and it's going to like constrain people not to put out as pretty a product and like a little bit more messy. And I think in having that tighter constraint, you get a little bit more creativity because if you know you don't have the time to make a thing pretty, you might push yourself to make it more unique in a way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see just more jams like that. I might not be able to participate them due to my schedule, but I'd like to see that become a secondary trend to like the current game jams trend that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've yet to participate in a game jam, and I definitely do have the time to do that. So maybe that'll be my goal for next week, is find a game jam to be part of. But when I was in two things, when I was in college, I went to both theater school and then I also went to culinary school. And some of the coolest moments were the ones that had the tightest time constraints. We had, for the theater school, we had a 24-hour, or we called it 24-hour, but it was really a 48-hour theater project, where at 7 o'clock at night, we would all be put into the theater faculty space. So it has all the classrooms, it has the stages, it has like the costume department and stuff. It's basically a big warehouse building that facilitates a lot of the play. And we would arrive at like 7 o'clock at night. We would be put into random teams of actors, directors, and writers. Writers would begin sort of crafting a play while they are crafting. We engage in mock auditions. So all the people who are selected as directors, typically seniors, and then juniors were screenwriters, and then a lot of the freshmen, sophomores were actors. And so the directors would like sit in a room, and then all of us would bring monologues. I was a freshman at the time, and we would engage in like these mock auditions. Then the directors would sort of like get one or two people they want to work with based on like some like vibes they were feeling. And then they would get like two or three others that would like be randomly selected and just kind of mix the pot a little bit. Then they would be paired with a screenwriter, or excuse me, not a screenwriter, a playwright. And then the whole thing would begin at like midnight, and everyone would be like reading lines and trying to like get everything to memory. And we would do that until about 4 or 5 in the morning. Then we would go to sleep until maybe like 9, like we would have 5 hours of sleep, and then we'd wake up, we would be locked in the theater as well, but we got supplied with food and stuff. The idea was like that we didn't want to like go out and do like not come back while other people were acting or whatever, like practicing.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be fair to like the rest of your team, to just be AWOL. So we're locked in there for a while. We do more stuff. During the day, this door is unlocked because other people still have classes. So it's not like off limits, but we're putting the stuff together. And then 7 o'clock the next day, we are performing. We have 5 performances back to back to back. Everyone can come and like watch a 24-hour project. And it was like very cool. And like I've been in things where like productions have taken 6 weeks of rehearsal and then just are not as good. And then we would have like an Iron Chef thing at Culinary. So very long-winded story that has me talking more than I would actually like in this particular section. But I think there is something really cool about like pushing yourself time-wise and not in a crunch way, but in like, this comes from like my productivity mind of what could you have done in an hour if you said that you only had an hour versus saying that like, oh, I have an hour today to write this whole paper or or something like that. Like, I don't know how to phrase that makes sense. Maybe I'm not communicating that well to the listener. I feel like you get me, but.
Yeah, like putting restrictions on yourself so that you can find creative ways to work within those restrictions.
Yes.
It feels like. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I totally agree. Like a shorter game jam, like, hey, you have 48 hours, join it, do it, mm-hmm. be done with it. And like, it's also faster on iteration. It's faster on failing. Like I feel like you learn faster in that environment because you can put your ash can out there, right? Ash can jam and just like put that stuff out there, get people's feedback. And then if you really liked that project, mm-hmm. you can work on it more after the jam. It doesn't disappear.
Yeah, like focusing more on ideas as an end product for jams instead of like a product mm-hmm. is I think what I really want. And like this, I sort of in retrospect, this is a lot like inspired by this one project I was lucky enough to work on that was inspired by a tweet Viditya made. I can't remember what the tweet was. It's something about Avatar, like the Last Airbender. And then Kazumi and Maria Misan sort of and Adira like all like kind of egged Viditya on. This is like really late at night on a Saturday or something. And like they just decided like, okay, we're just going to start a Google Doc and make this fucking game, make this Avatar game. And a bunch of people just like said, like, can I jump in? And I jumped in. And like, it was like a dozen people just working on this Avatar game from like midnight Pacific to like 4 or 5 AM Pacific. And just like throwing ideas out in this Google Doc. And then it was a lot of really cool stuff. It was me engaging with a lot of these designers I didn't know at the time. And like, there wasn't a said time limit or anything, but like, we all kind of knew like it was kind of, if at least to me, it felt like this very ephemeral thing. But like, once people leave, they're probably not going to come back to this. And then out of that, like we all thought it was really good. And then out of that, Maria Misan on their Twitch, Maria Bumby.itch.io, put out Dual Natures, an Avatar inspired face off. And I think that's like one of the most creative projects I ever participated in. And that came out of a very game jam esque environment that just came out of in response to a shitpost tweet with ETMA.
I love that. How cool would that like 6-hour workshop like experience be, right? Like to just like randomly draw 5 people. Here's your prompt inside of a Google Doc link we'll give you. Go to fucking town. Like something like that is really like, I don't know. I like the energy of it. It's very like tingling. I think that is a beautiful trend to think about too. Just like thinking about shorter things, right? I think about like shorter campaigns, like when you do actual plays. I think about shorter iteration cycles. I think about like not trying to bite off more than you can chew at any one given time.
Right.
And doing things like very small increments very quickly, I think is more powerful than something you do on a longer stretch of time that you end up like sputtering out of and then feel sort of unfulfilled in because you didn't want to iterate on it.
That gives you a lot more room to be like a lot, or not room, I guess, but gives you opportunity to be a lot more focused and be a lot tighter. So like you just, there's this very specific theme or this very specific moment I want to hit. And like, I don't need 300 pages to do it. I can do it in 12 and like, that's all I need. And I can do it in a weekend and like getting that out and then doing a bunch of small projects that like really hit on these very specific things can be as fulfilling as having this long sort of epic thing. Like I have projects that are going to end up being longer, like sort of more trad fantasy games that I'm passionate about, but they do hit a different spot than a lot of these smaller, tighter games that I'm working on too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think there's room for both in our industry.
Yeah.
Neither is like exclusionary of the other.
Yeah. And also not like better than the mm-hmm. other as well. They just feel different. I think that's a really cool thing that you're sort of maybe touching on here is mm-hmm. like they fill different niches. Like there are people who want the 300 page campaign book. Mm-hmm. There are people who just want the pillars, like in Galactic 2E, like that's enough for them, right? Who have good improv skills. It's also about like level of knowledge, right? Like some people want a big book that can hold their hand a lot of the time. That's why like D&D adventure modules exist and stuff like that. And then there are some people who just don't buy that. But what they do buy are like toolkit things for prompting, maybe stuff like Beak, Feather, and Bone or Mother Effing Microscope, right? Like a lot of those games facilitate creative tertiary uses. Grasping Nettles is another example. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's about like the niche isn't, I don't know. I've had some recent conversations where it's about like, how do you capture a wider audience? And I think that when you want to turn this into a business, when you want to turn game design into a business, right? And I think that the thing is that there is a wide audience out there that's not being grabbed because you're focusing on the wider audience that's already grabbed, right? I mean, people talk about accessibility in their games for dyslexia or colorblindness or providing audio components. Those are people who are not being engaged with in our industry on a wide level, right? Those are people who will buy your product or your content if that's what you want this to be, like if you want to, and as the show is, it's providing an avenue both for doing this as a hobby but also doing this as a career, is like there are people out there who are not being fulfilled in the needs that they have. And so instead of trying to conquer Wizards of the Coast and break off a piece of that pie, why not just bake your own pie?
Right. And like you can play in that pool that Wizards has, that very high fantasy, heroic sort of sorcery and magic, and still be a lot different. You can be like a lot of these OSR games are like so drastically different, or like maybe I should say Sword Dream instead of OSR because they're less fash. And but there's a lot of games that like sort of play in that same wheelhouse that feel like really unique. And like you can have that D&D experience, but you could also have these other experiences playing you could play like the same adventure and have such a different experience just based on the different mechanics a different game gives you, mm-hmm. because you have a different way to engage with mm-hmm. the conflicts that are presented to you. And there's room for that. And like, it doesn't, like, we don't all need to play 5e. You can play 5e if you want, but like, there's room for everything else. And there's room for everything. And like, there's this writing aphorism, I think, that I can't remember the specific phrasing of, but like, to have great appeal, you want to be very specific, mm-hmm. because like, people, there's 7 billion people on this planet. A lot of them are going to have a lot of that same experience and like those same things. So like by emulating this very specific feeling, emotion, theme, you're going to appeal to a certain number of those 7 billion people who hopefully you like, and a certain number of them are going to engage with content in the language that you present it in and can engage with that if you can get it to them. And so mm-hmm. like you don't need to appeal to everybody. You just need to appeal to this very specific thing and hope and try and get that in the hands of the other people who like that, who are also interested in that thing.
Got to find your 100 true fans. You know what I mean? Love it. Great saying. Kevin, last little bit here. That's me. It's you. God, if I could hug you right now. I'm making a hugging noise on this microphone. I hope I'm not blowing out your ears. Tips, last little tip thing. If you had a tip out there to share in terms of, because you're part of a lot of projects. And so I know, like, collaboration is pretty much the basic answer to this, but, like, what have you found to be effective in terms of connecting with people? What would be a tip you could give for people who want to broaden their social circles or be a part of more things? What have you found effective for you?
Right. Circling back, finding niches of things. Like, fine, I was able to get on Unbreakable because I'm in the niche of Asian English-speaking designers working in tabletop, and, like, that's not an avenue that's accessible to everybody, clearly, mm-hmm. but, like, you can find these niches of, like, there's Uncaged Anthology, where it's an all-femme-focused team, I believe, and, mm-hmm. like, sort of finding these groups that really want to pursue these very specific niches, and through their being not a shitty person and, like, showing yourself as reliable in working with people so that they, and then letting it be known, like, don't like be shy about being like, I'm looking for some writing work. Like, I'm currently on the McGuffin & Co. Odd Jobs Kickstarter writing something for one of their supplements. And I just straight up added them on Twitter. Like, hey, you need somebody to contribute to this? I can contribute to this. And, like, There's folks putting out those feelers out there if you know where to look. And also, like, if you are just actively in these social spaces, people will, like, notice you and come to you for stuff. My very first writing gig, I got connected to that. I wrote for the history of Vietnam in reference to France for Red Carnations on a Black Grave. And I was able to get that through James Mendez Hodes, who we both shared a social space. And he put out feelers for, like, are there any Vietnamese descent folks who can speak to this subject matter? I was like, I can speak to that subject matter. And I was able to get on that project through that. So it's just being active in these social spaces but not in such a way that's like that you're mining for opportunities, like just be there because you like being in these social spaces, specifically social spaces, and like make it known that you're looking for opportunities, but don't make it weird in that you're only looking for opportunities. Your primary in social spaces, specifically, your primary goal should be to be social and to, like, be friendly with folks and, like, connect. But those will hopefully lead to other spaces that are more work oriented, and in those you can also get more work. Mm-hmm. So, like, just be in these spaces. Don't be an asshole, but don't hide the fact that you're looking for work. Or, like, the three highlights there.
I love it. I'm here for it. I vibe with it. I'm engaging in that now, and so yeah, I think, you know, often on the show we've had the advice of, like, find social circles to be a part of. But I think it's also, I think what's missing from maybe that advice that you sort of put out here that I maybe never articulated or tried to articulate with other guests. Not that they didn't mean this. I don't want to, I'm not spitting on any other guests here. Please, I love every one of you. But I think something to add to that advice is, like, be a part of the spaces that you want to be a part of, right? I think part of that past advice is, like, be a part of spaces that you quote unquote need to be a part of. Like, that's how it could feel, right? Be a part of the Brain Trust because there are a lot of designers there, maybe not necessarily because you like game design, right? Mm-hmm. If you wanted to be in actual play production, like, maybe that's not the space for you there, right? That will help you do the thing you want to do, right? And it shouldn't be transactional. It's not what I'm trying to put here, but you should find the spaces that you want to. You know, you are a person is a sum of the people that they have around them, and then is also an additional sum of the people that those people have around them, right? You're like a combination of, like, 16 different people. Mm-hmm. And so at any one time. And I think that, you know, I wanted to be a part of a game design culture. I wanted to be a part of a POC culture. I want to be a part of conversations about diversity and inclusion. I want to be a part of trad adventure game spaces because I like those sorts of games. And, you know, all of that has the opportunity for me to be a part of it if I want to, you know, do an actual play using a trad adventure game. I want to design lore for people. I want to help with GM systems. I want to make subclasses or whatever have you, whatever the pieces are, right? And so if you have, I think if those all become resonant, it will naturally provide opportunities for you to be a part of things. And that's what I'm picking up from what you're saying here. Are we on the same page, Kevin?
Yeah. And like, make sure you want to be in those spaces, not that you need to be in those spaces. Yes. There are like, yes, for some folks, this is like work and things, but also it is a lot of these spaces are very social, and like people will be very keen to pick up on if you're coming at this in a transactional manner. Mm-hmm. And like, nobody wants that. Like, regardless, like we can contract each other and like, we can help each other out and work for each other. But specifically in social spaces like Discords, if you come in there and like only want to talk about your own stuff, only want to like mine other people for their ideas, and people will queue up on that. And like, that's not acting in good faith of the space. Mm-hmm. And that's really, it's bad form in like most spaces, especially in more socially oriented spaces. And also in that, like, make sure you're operating within your own comfort levels, because people can pick up on that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, speaking for myself, I find it very difficult to engage in larger Discords. Like, I joined the Brain Trust when it wasn't super, it had a big audience, but like, it wasn't like it wasn't as busy as it currently is. And mm-hmm. I could engage more then, but now it's become a little overwhelming for me. So now I'm more lurking in there and not really putting out as much. And I'm more spectating. And like, that's just my comfort level, because I find it like, I struggle to keep up in spaces that have a certain threshold of a large audience and people, and a certain threshold of activity, because just for a personal reason. So like, make sure you're operating in your own comfort levels in all things, really, because your own comfort should be secondary only to like the comfort of like the planet.
What a beautiful note to end on. Praise the planet. Kevin. Mother Nature, please. Thank you for being on the show, Kevin. It has been an absolute, I mean, we talk outside of this, but it's finally a pleasure to have you on the show, on the record. For everyone at home, Kevin, why don't you give a quick outro to yourself? Again, plug yourself, talk about things. Where can people find you, get to you? All these links will be in the show notes for your access listeners.
I'm Kevin Nguyen. My pronouns are currently he, him. You can find my personal game work over on nguyenconditions.com. That's Nguyen conditions.com, which will lead to an itch page, which includes Volley Boys, my latest release. And soon we'll hopefully include Nice Kill, a related volleyball anime release. And you can also find my written work currently in Unbreakable Volume 1, available on DriveThruRPG, and the upcoming Unbreakable Revolutions, which will also be available on DriveThruRPG. And you can come see me on Wednesday nights at 5:30 Pacific on twitch.tv/allnerdshere, playing on an all BIMPOC cast with Simon Moody, Alex Guerrero, Charu Patel, Viditya Valetti, and JR Zambrano. We're currently playing in some retro future cyberpunk through Hardwired Island. We're having a great time. I play a really grumpy old skater man who looks like the Crypt Keeper and acts like the Crypt Keeper.
Amazing. Really great stuff. Yeah. Make sure to go check out all this. Make sure to go get Volley Boys. Look out for Nice Kill. Everyone, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for sitting along with Kevin and I. We really appreciate it. And, you know, I learned a lot. So I hope you did too. We will see you next time. Say bye to the people, Kevin.
Bye. Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
Bye. Thanks for being here. All right, that's a wrap. Thank you for taking the time to sit down and hang out with Kevin and I. We really appreciate it. You can find links and resources down below in the show notes, such as getting in touch with Kevin or other episodes with similar topics. If you want to be a part of the conversation, please come and join the community Discord server. Also, make sure to subscribe to the Draw Your Dice Patreon, where you can get access to early releases of episodes from as soon as we interview. Thanks again for stopping by, and as always, I will catch you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.